Just the heats. The combination's getting to the house, 78 to 14.
Oh, that's our cost. Right, 78.
You don't need one of the keys. And then you can tell them how you use the wall.
Yeah?
It just went to get me.
Email. Said tomorrow.
Well, maybe you want to use the.
And did I use the chair?
Yeah. I'm talking about people. How bad need a ball.
Ball has a comedy guy. What else? What are other?
I think it's a great grandchild.
I think it's a.
Can't be a grandson.
There's also a sale.
Has to be.
Yeah.
His daughter is a young youngster.
Yeah.
Chavi didn't even know about the ceiling.
Right,
you've been saying there's also a ceiling
fan. The guy's
city.
Yeah. Building room. Okay, everyone come close. We won't have a big class. Everyone's either in America or at a wedding tonight. Come close. Don't be afraid of me. Welcome.
Thank you.
We're afraid you can ask us questions. We don't want to be too close.
Who's getting married?
I don't know. Someone that they all know. But I don't know. It's not no one from the Kollel. It could be a Torah Shraka graduate. Okay. Today is January 15, 2017. Hello to the devoted students in front of me, and a big hello to the thousands listening across the world. This morning I had an interesting experience. I was sitting with Malka in Kanyon Hadar, and the young man, we see a couple coming in with a baby that looked not more than a few weeks old, and Malko said she wouldn't go out with a baby that young, and sure enough, the father came running over, and a virtual Talmud. So I said, hey, you know who I am, you're not giving a lecture, you don't hear my voice, he said. So I understand on the YU website there's a picture of the people. And Ein Hachinami, the baby was 2 weeks old, so take it as you wish, clash of generations and thinking. It's good to see you, Steve. Thank you for the wonderful, wonderful evening and the wonderful company. Thank you. Tomorrow I hit a minion of great-grandchildren, Sokana and Hara. And next Monday is a very special class. It's going to be turned into a movie afterwards. It's Chad Pami, the roaring 1920s, the seeds that germinate into Yeshiva University. The seeds are planted in the 20s, and that's next Monday. It's part of Rabbi Beryl Wein's series. He's now dealing with the 1920s. Okay, but I'm ready to roll. Last time we met, it seems a while ago, but I guess it was last week. We had the tragedy. Yeah, last Sunday. It was Sarah Batavis. No wonder, so it was 2 weeks ago. On Sarah Batavis, that was the tragedy. You all know that the person who killed the Machabel is the son of a YU Mismach, of Tzani Run's son, Eitan Run. I saw the kid grow up under my eyes. Kol hakavod lo. We spoke last week about the problem dealing with the status of Jews that are not from. We got involved with Russian Jewry. We dealt with inviting people Friday night, and I have some interesting information to add that came to me from around the world. Number one, in the question that I mentioned, or the idea I mentioned about someone stopping you in Shabbos and asking for, how do I get to this address? And he looks at you when you tell him you don't know or you don't want to answer. So it's a delicate question. I told you I asked the Rav this question, and the Rav told me give the most direct directions. I later spoke it over with Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, and Rav Aaron differed with his father-in-law and felt it was Messiah L'Dei Avera. And it's an interesting question, but I mentioned Kaliach Yad that we really don't see Mishum Eva between Jew to Jew. And Micha Berger, who's a devoted student, sent me a little essay here and referred me to the article in the Talmudical Encyclopedia, Eva. But I have to say, I stand my ground. In other words, what I'm trying to say is we do see Eva between Jew and Gentile, meaning the Gemara says we bury the dead of the Gentiles, we give tzedakah to Gentiles. If you're familiar with what just happened with Chovevei Torah, the great Taharam, I don't know how to say that in English, but the noise that was raised by the English edition, I believe it is, of Yateid Ne'aman, it dealt with Chovevei Torah and one of their faculty members writing a responsum that we should help rebuild churches that were destroyed in America in floods and bombings and what. We have an obligation to help. And all right, I don't know if we have an obligation to help build churches, but there's no question that if the Gentiles are collecting for a charity, we should give. And there it's Mishum Eva, that they shouldn't say the Jews only give to Jewish causes, but don't give to Red Cross, let's say, something that's a non-sectarian cause. But Mishum Eva, that a Jew should hate me, I don't want him to hate me, I don't want to have enmity, so maybe I should give them directions how to travel on Shabbos. A Mishum Eva like that we don't find. It could be that throughout the millennium we didn't have Jews who were Mechalalei Shabbos. In other words, it's not that Jews weren't sinners. Lo aleinu, if you know the response to literature, there were always sinners, but no one changed the religion. On Yom Kippur they said, Salach lanu aminu ki chatanu. They didn't say that you're allowed to murder, you're allowed to commit adultery, you're allowed to do this. They admitted they sinned, but Mishum Eva, it could be, I kept on thinking, maybe it's with Trumat Maisrat. There's a world of material, can you trust another Jew? And you see, at times, for instance, the three regalim, everyone has a chazaka of a chaver. Yerushalayim ha-benuya ki yesh ha-chubra lo yachtav. And you see the concept, we give every Jew credit, he shouldn't feel left out. So maybe there's a slight trace of Eva, of enmity. But nevertheless, the real enmity, if someone asked you for directions, we don't have any sources on it. And it's an interesting question. I throw it open. If anyone's interested, here are the sources. I Xerox the article in the Talmudica. And you're welcome to it. Let me just see that I'm not giving anything else away. One second. Here's the article. Okay. Also, we then quoted Reb Moshe. We ended off last week's shiur on Reb Moshe Feinstein. And Reb Moshe dealing with questions about organizing a minyan on Shabbos where, you know, people are going to ride to shul. And Reb Moshe was certainly machmir 100%. I showed you other opinions, but I mentioned that one of the tshuvot by Reb Moshe is to a rabbi named Moshe Elia Kaplan. And Yossi Azoz, if I'm pronouncing his last name right, emailed me that Moshe Elia Kaplan is the legendary Rabbi Aryeh Kaplan. That shivus to Rabbi Aryeh Kaplan, who at the time was teaching at the Liberal Day School Elio Academy in Louisville, Kentucky. At the same time, he was studying for his degree at the University of Louisville, and he was concerned that many of his students would drive on Shabbat. And he's the one that asked the question of Reb Moshe. Regarding the tshuva, I quoted from Rav Steinbuch that better they should write the shul on Shabbos and learn what Shabbat is about. They're going to be Mechalel Shabbos anyway. So Yossi tells me that he worked at the Sfadik Temple in Cedarhurst, New York. He attended a Jewish youth workshop sponsored by the National Council of Young Israel, and they knew that people were riding to shul on Shabbos. And they quoted Reb Moshe Steinberg's tshuva lahakel, that they could depend on it. Also, he made one more correction, and he may be right, that if you recall with Theodor Herzl, this may be the Monday class, I don't remember which class, but let me say it, and anyone listening will pick it up. With Theodor Herzl, I mentioned that I recall a whole machloket whether to bury, when they reburied Theodor Herzl on right near here, Har Herzl, it's named after him. So when they reburied him, there was a machloket whether to rebury his wife as well, because she hated the Zionist movement with a passion. And I remember saying to my students years ago that I would have voted to rebury her, because she had ample reason to hate the Zionist movement. She had a husband, you know, you marry a man, an assimilated Jew who gives his wife attention, and suddenly, many years into the marriage, he becomes totally Jewish, only cares about our Jewish problems. He's not yet totally frum. He has no time for his wife, no time for his children. So I can understand why she was angry. So some of the great scholars listening tell me Theodor Herzl's wife, she had her body cremated and the ashes were lost by her son, so that it could not be a machlekes whether to rebury her here. But the people tell me, probably what I'm confusing it with in my mind is the children. There was a whole machlekes, all his children, one perished in the Holocaust, at least there's no body. But there was one child who committed suicide in America. There was another child who converted away from Judaism. I mean, hatred for the father. You don't have to be a student who's our great philosopher, our great, Freud, not Jung, I kept on thinking Jung, but Freud, the Rebbe of all the modern day psychologists. And Freud, you don't have to be a great student of Freud to understand the enmity between child and parent. But they did rebury his children here, which I think was the proper thing to do. Okay, now I want to go further. I've paid my debts to society, and I want to raise a very fascinating issue.
Did I misunderstand you? I came in late. There was a tshuva justifying writing to Shul?
There was a tshuva that permitted you can run a service on Shabbos, even though you know some kids will become, because their parents are going to drop them off. Reb Moshe Steinbruch.
But that's what the conservative movement got tried.
No, the conservative movement permitted driving to shul on Shabbos.
That's not what the tshuva says.
I know the tshuva by heart.
The tshuva says if you live.
If there's no other way to get to the temple, it's permitted to drive to shul on Shabbos. This is not saying it's permitted to drive to shul on Shabbos, but this is saying the rabbi or the youth director running the service should not feel bad that once he announces there's going to be a youth service, some of the kids may come by car. You follow? There's a big difference. It's not being matir driving on Shabbos. But it's telling us we can go further and do what we have to do. It's the same question. We spoke in great detail in Vav. This is Reb Menashe Klein's Sheila, inviting people to your house Friday night. You have a son who's no longer from. Maisim b'chol yom lo aleinu.
Right.
No, what do you do? So you
have to tell him not to drive.
So you have to tell him, look, we'd like you to sleep over. But the choice is his. That's Reb Moshe would not be happy with that. But halacha l'maisa, that's what Reb Shlomo Zalman paskin, and that's what the Menashe Klein paskin, and Reb Moshe Sternberg would agree with it too. Which is interesting because Reb Moshe Sternberg is the Eidah Haredit. But here's an unbelievable tshuva that I don't believe this has ever been asked before, and this is typical of Reb Menashe Klein. He will answer every question. I'm referring now to Chelik Yudchet, the volume of his tshuva that appeared already after his death, Chelik Yudchet, Siman Ayin Chet. The tshuva was written in 1978, written to someone named, from Yerushalayim, David Ackerman. David Ackerman, the last name speaks to me because my eldest son-in-law is Ackerman. I have a beautiful Ackerman family, and I see the name Ackerman, but it could be it's a relative, I don't know. Now, and he describes the situation very simply. Kirov has become, when I was growing up, there was no such thing as Kirov. No one even used the word, we never heard of the word. Chabad were the first to begin in the early 50s when the sixth Rebbe already spoke about it, but I can't say it became a movement. With the seventh Rebbe, it certainly went on the map. Once Chabad went on the map, so you see Yeshiva University got involved, the OU got involved, and the stories of Kirov today, it is a profession unto itself. I can say of the graduates of the Kollel, those that have gone into the rabbinate, fine. Perhaps for everyone going into the rabbinate, people are in Kirov. Just last week, one of my top students visited here, Rabbi David Pardo, who's one of my top students in the last 10 years. The Iron Lion, Leib Ayans, one of my top students in the last 15 years. You know who that is, David, Rabbi Ayans. It's his father is the Rav in Detroit. So you'll wonder how he got to YU. The whole family is Laker. So you know how he got to YU. I'll tell you an interesting story here. This is, we're standing together. This is after he got smicha, he went to me and I went to visit him, and the Kos reads, Talmud Shagala Maglin Rabo Imo. So here we are standing, Yeshivat Mir Yerushalayim, at the entrance. So he once heard me speak. Years ago, when I spoke beyond the Kolem, maybe in the OU, he was in Mir. And he made up his mind he's going to be my student. And he calls YU and said, you need a college degree. You got to know Leib Ayans. Came up within a year and a half, he got a college degree. Then they told me, you got to do smicha 1 year in New York first. Then you go to Israel. He did the first year in New York, and he spent here many years. He today, he's getting a doctorate, by the way. He today is in Toronto in outreach. So you see, it became a profession. Now, outreach, I think in Hebrew, the expression they use, the slang is sach nash, you can correct me, sicha nafshit. I once saw, I was at one of the ceremonies in the army for my grandchildren, and my grandchildren, I want you to know, I also did basic training and served in the army, so it's not my grandchildren, my children, but my grandchildren. I watched what was happening already. By then I knew the system, including the army, inside out. So I can just see the picture on top of the tank. The commander, the mafaked, is talking with my grandson. And I see it's a serious talk. So afterwards, I asked my grandson, what were you talking about? And I think the word was sachnash, he used sichanavshit. And it was, the commander was trying to pressure him to remain in the army. He was finishing his 2 years, or a year and a half, year and 8 months, and he was going back to yeshiva. And my grandson did not want to remain in the army. He wanted to go back to continue learning. He's a serious, he's teaching today in Shalavim. So that's a sachnash. Now, with outreach, what is outreach about? Outreach, you can stand on your head, you can sing, dance. There's one moment where the person has questions. You get involved in a very serious talk. That talk can change a person's life. You have to be able to answer his questions, you have to be able to point them in the right direction. You can never tell what the right word is. I know over the decades I've gotten so many letters thanking me for saving their spiritual lives, mainly Haredim. The people from YU who are breaking away are not interested in Rakefet. Or don't want the message, but Haredim, I have no idea what I said. I mean, sometimes, you know, it's Shvatami, one of our big supporters, is someone that I changed his life, not even knowing. I met him only years later. He was afraid, you can't even talk, you know, to come near Rav Rakefet. Must be like a Chassidic Rebbe surrounded by interferers. So when you're in the middle of that talk, do you want to break off? It's time to daven mincha. And you got to remember, I taught you many times, there's an expression in Yiddish, "Efafelt nishta mincha." I once tried to check, I asked Rav Avraham Yeshua Heschel, Professor Heschel's first cousin, a good friend of mine, also a Heschel by birth, went to Ramaz with my wife. They were classmates, were a year apart, very good friends of ours for generations. So I asked her, how frum was your cousin? I said, he went without a kippah, but it's true, you know, in front of an audience, very dramatically, he would fill the cup of water, put on a kippah, make a bracha, very dramatically. He was a good actor. So I said, how frum was he? So she answered me, et nishfa felt amincha. What does that mean? Shachris, you wake up early, you daven. Marav, you can daven at 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, and you shalim their minyanim. If you need a minyan at 3:30 in the morning, you'll find a minyan for Marav in Zichron Moshe. But the middle of the day, mincha, you gotta be from, you gotta break off life. There's a story with, I think it's who did I tell it with, Dembitz. There was a, Dembitz was a lawyer, Philadelphia. We're talking 130, 140 years ago. And it's a well-known story that he told the judge he has to recite his afternoon prayers. Can they recess the trial for 10 minutes? And the judge, they had respect for religion to them, recessed the trial. I later taught his great-granddaughter in Michalan in the 70s, and she was of American origins, although born here, and I don't know how good her English was, but she was so proud. I said, I know the story, I've heard about it. And Mincha is Mincha? No, imagine you're in the middle of this talk with this Baal Tshuva to be, let's say, or potential Baal Tshuva, or Baal Tshuva B'koach, and you're telling him, I got to stop the Sicha now. Now, I don't have to elaborate. All of you understand when you're in a moment of passion, a moment of ecstasy, and you break it off, it's very hard to start up again. And this is a fabulous question. Now, if you look at it very seriously, take this question seriously, people involved in outrage, it can reach a point where they're never going to daven at all. In other words, every day they're involved, they're talking, they think they're accomplishing. And I have to tell you, it's a very fascinating chidush, Chatam Sofer. We're dealing here with Reb Moshe Sofer. It's not, this is not a small acharon, you understand. I come from the Litvish world, and I know Litvish poskim inside out. Some of them I knew personally, and I can tell you, they didn't deal with acharonim. But even those who didn't deal with acharonim, like Reb Moshe, like Reb Moshe Feinstein, like the Rav, but the Chatam Sofer, the Noda B'Yehuda, you didn't overlook. So the Chatam Sofer in his Chidushim to Masechet Sukkah, I believe it's on Daf Lamed Hey, Daf Lamed Dalet, it's the Chidushim that were published in the manuscript in 1947 in Israel. In that edition, in the Sugya and Sukkah, Ha'osek B'Mitzvah, Patur Min HaMitzvah, you know about the Chatan V'Kala, if the Sukkah's not big enough, can you make the Sheva Brachos outside the Sukkah, etc. So he raises a very simple question. No, my dear students, Rakefet is a religious Zionist with every fiber of his body. He has said many times, I have heard him say to American audiences, doctors, lawyers, accountants, dentists, what have you? You are losing out by living in Chutz Laaretz. Why? Because in Eretz Yisrael, no matter what your profession is, whatever you're doing is a mitzvah asei d'oraita of building the land of Israel. Right or wrong? Yishev Eretz Yisrael, what is it all about? A doctor? What a mitzvah of yid. Forget about gemilat chesed. Forget about medicine. A lawyer? What a mitzvah. Wow, imagine a lawyer on a patent and he's helping a Jew just discover something that can help fight cancer and he's getting him a patent. Wow, mitzvah there of Yisrael. Look what happened. The New York Times just wrote a tremendous article that Israel is now a wealthy country. What we have, the oil, the gas that they found, it's unbelievable. Knew the people who worked on it, the people who are taking it out of the ground. They're not just doing a profession. They are doing mitzvah yishev Eretz Yisrael. So the Chatam Sofer raises the question, maybe they're potter from any other mitzvah. How do you have time to put on tefillin? Working ground is a tremendous mitzvah. Being a lawyer is a tremendous mitzvah. Being a doctor, a dentist, of course it's a nurse, the greatest mitzvah in the world. No, Osek B'mitzvah, Patur Min HaMitzvah. You don't have to do anything else. No tefillin, no davening. You have a ready-made solution. All mitzvah taseh that are going to interfere with mitzvah of Yishuv HaAretz, you're Patur. It's a very interesting question. The Rebbe Ovadia Yosef has a long tshuva dealing with this as well. He calls the Chacham Sofer. But I'll tell you, if you take this approach to the end, you wind up with no mitzvot whatsoever. So what you have to say is, Hu tziva v'hu tziva. The Ribbono Shel Olam gave us a mitzvah of tefillin, and he gave us a mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. It doesn't mean that one cancels out the other. You have to arrange your time that you should be able to do both of them. You should be able to do all of them. You may be a doctor, may be a dentist, may be a lawyer, may be an accountant, but it doesn't mean that you give up your lifestyle as a Torah Jew. God commanded mitzvah Yishuv Eretz, and God commanded the other mitzvah. Obviously, when it's a question of pikuach nefesh is doicha kol haTorah kula chutz megimel averot. And I just had a long talk with my eldest grandson today. We were talking about the army and being a doctor. These kids are older; they're in their 30s, and they've been through life. And I was talking with my grandson, how did he feel in the army? He said he was never shomer Shabbos one Shabbos day. I said, always on patrol, always on patrol. It was a frontline unit. And we were talking about doctors who ride to shul and ride to work on and yontif, and then the whole question, can they drive home? Emergencies, nurses. And my grandson made an interesting comment. He said he wishes all the hospitals in Israel were like Shaarei Tzedek or the Frum Hospital in Bnei Brak. Why? Because everything is run al pi halacha. If you know Shaarei Tzedek, you'll see even on Yom Kippur, they have mini buses with signs on it that it's being driven by a Shabbos guy, and it's for the hospital to pick up nurses, to pick up doctors, to pick up emergencies. And in the hospital itself, anything that has to be written, they have non-Jews that accompany the doctors and write everything down or record what has to be recorded on Shabbos. So you can work it out. But if we're going to take the attitude, I'll say the mitzvah, put them in a mitzvah, we wind up, you know, you can have someone arranging shidduchim. No, is there a bigger mitzvah? Yomo, is there a bigger mitzvah than to arrange shidduchim? No, you know what it goes into a shidduch. You have to call this one Esther, am I right? You got to call that one. You have to balance. So it's a very, very interesting question. But I have to tell you that there is a source that, and I'll show you the source, and it's very powerful, and later I'm going to reveal a source that Otzko couldn't publish it in this generation. But I think it's an unbelievable source, and if I feel I'm sailing high, I'm going to cut off all microphones and all recorders and tell you another story. I have to do it because the Shurins are sitting here, Bididei HaVi'uvda, with Mrs. Revel. You won't believe your ears. We'll get there. We've got to build up to it. Okay, what's the source? Oh boy, I'm going to give it to you in a minute. Olseik b'tzachei tziba. When you're involved, tzachei tziba, you're putter from everything else. Not only that, but the Rishonim say, Olseik b'tzachei tziba is like learning Torah. There's nothing greater. It's the greatest mitzvah. You're helping the Jewish people. And Reb Menashe Klein says, if that's the case, Ein tzarich lipsok mi Talmud Torah. You don't have to stop. When Chazal already say, when someone is learning Torah around the clock, like Ben Azai. How come Ben Azai never married? No, how come Ben Azai never married? A mitzvah b'asei the oraita, through a revu. There's no greater mitzvah than through a revu. Without through a revu, none of us would be sitting here. There'd be no Jewish people. Some anti-Semite in London criticized Israel, a member of parliament, I believe it was from the British parliament, a few weeks ago. He criticized Israel that we encourage the women to have children. Could you imagine? He quoted, and now, you know, the government, the savings plan, every child born, Every month the government puts 50, are you aware of this? Every month 50 shekel, you can add 50 shekel, and you have the choice to put it with a bank, to put it with a kupat gemel. It's unbelievable what the government is doing to encourage parents to have children. And when children reach 18, or they show you how many thousands and thousands of shekel it'll be worth, and if you keep it to 21, or when you leave the army, how much more it'll be worth. And this anti-Semite, wow. And how is Ben Asher? But Ben Asher was learning Torah. Torah is the greatest mitzvah. Tama Torah keneged kulam. You don't stop learning Torah. It's not a cheta for anyone in this room who's not married, because you guys don't learn day and night. I can testify to that. When I walk into this building, 6:15, 6:20, I see you sound asleep in your beds. I see people going to mikveh 9 o'clock in the morning, 8:30, getting in the mikveh. All right, I respect the Hasidic lifestyle more than you can imagine, but don't follow Ben Azai's example. But wow, and he cites sources that you don't have to stop learning Torah. You don't have to stop even to daven, even for Kriyat Shema, and look at the sources. And even if you're going to lose out on davening, and you don't have to be mashlim the tefillah. If something happened that, what's your first name?
Dani.
Dani, if you went to sleep and you didn't wake up in time, oh, you missed mincha. So what do you have to do? You have to daven Maariv twice. The first is Maariv, then afterwards the Hashem. Tashlumim, right? If you're learning Torah, or you're Oseik B'tzachei Tziba, you don't have to daven Maariv twice, because at the time that you had a daven Mincha, you were not chayav, you were not obligated. You were involved in the greatest, most important mitzvah in the world. Wow. And now, let me give you a source. What a tshuva, fascinating. Let me give you a source. Our dear friend, the Rambam, Hilchat Kriyat Shema, Perek Bet, Halacha Hey, right at the end. Haya Oseg B'tzachei Rabim, Lo Yapsik. Eliyudmar is kehem. V'yikra im ye im nisha eid likro. That you're all safe but tzachei rabim. It's a meeting. You're at the governor's office. You're at Congress, the Senate. You're in the Knesset. You're before a vadar, a committee in the Knesset. Don't interrupt. Finish what you're doing. And if there's time left, then you'll say Shema. But if there's no time, all right, you are not obligated to say Shema. Oseik b'mitzvah, potter min mitzvah. If you're not obligated to say Shema, which is the oraita, alacha kama v'kama, you're not obligated to daven, which is only the rabbanan, at least the form of davening, without getting involved in the machlokes rishonim. But the way we daven is certainly only the Rabbanan. And you look into the Kesef Mishnah, and the Kesef Mishnah says exactly what I said. You're putter from Kriyat Shema, certainly putter from davening. And he says, he quotes the Gemara where the Gemara deals with the Chachamim were out of Sudah, and they were putter from davening. Why? They were eating. It was a sudat mitzvah, a sudah of Ibur HaChodesh. The sudah that Yerushalmi talks about, that's the source for Shirayim, by the way, that the next day Tanaim would come in and eat from the crumbs under the table. They should be mitzvah, they should join with the Gedolei Yisrael that ate here yesterday when they discussed and established that it'll be an Ibur Chodesh, one more day. Oseik b'mitzvah, patur min ha-mitzvah, Kesef Mishnah, agreeing with the Rambam. Continue the Kesef Mishnah. He's not so happy with this. We're going to give up davening. We're going to give up Kriyat Shema. So he quotes Rabbeinu Manoach. Very interesting thought. When did this apply? Dafke bedoret harishonim shachayu oskim imchat sibua l'shem shamayim. When did this apply? In the earlier generations when people acted l'shem shamayim. Do me a favor, Danny, can you close the door? And I got to tell you, the Kesef Mishner struggles with this Torah Rishonim. And he says at the end, Anglo Tom, I really can't agree with this. If you're Oseik B'mitzvah, Patur Min HaMitzvah has to apply today, has to apply as the Rambam said. What does it mean, Dafka B'Dorot HaRishonim? And here is a very interesting point that has haunted me. When I started teaching in Israel, 69, 70, 71, so those first few years, I had a full-time job with the Encyclopedia Judaica, who brought me to Israel to finish out, because it's a whole story, but the Judaica originally was a government enterprise. It was reparations money from Germany, because Hitler stopped the publication of the Judaica, which had 7 or 8 volumes in German. And they gave money to do it and complete it in English. Kolzman, it was a government project, the Kum Heintef Kum Morgen, very hard to translate. I come today, I come tomorrow, nothing is pressing, the government is paying. They sold out to private people, ultimately kept the publishing, Rishon from Australia. And now it's a money project, it's privately owned. So they needed serious people who could help bring it to fruition. And that's how I wind up coming to Israel in 69. So the first 2 years, I can't go back to teaching full-time because I have this job and I had signed the contract. One of the great deans, Rashi Yeshiva here, wanted me to break the contract, said, in Israel, you break a contract. And I said, I can't break a contract. Thank God, I retained some American Torah sense of decency and honesty. But at the end of 2 years, the encyclopedia was out, and then I faced a choice. They offered me a fabulous position to remain at Keter Publishing, but I had to go back to teaching and staff. In other words, I gave up heavy money by Israeli standards, 2,000 lira a month at that time, and I went back to teaching. Fine. So no one wants to give me a full-time job. I'm teaching in, I think it was five different schools. I was at Hebrew U, I had a few hours, and Ephrata and Lifshitz and BMT and Gold. Okay? So one of the schools, Ephrata, I'll never forget, the principal reads a quote to us. It's a teacher's meeting. And the principal reads a quote. What a terrible generation is coming along. The students don't give a hoot. No one's interested in study. No one is serious. The world will come to an end if this is the next generation. And then, and the principal says, who stated this? And no one answers. And he says, Socrates. How many years is it since Socrates? So you see, every Rebbe, you look at your students, you look at what they know, how little they know. Wow, it's depressing. You look back at your Rebbe, you think to yourself, who the heck am I that I got an award for being the most popular Rebbe on the YU faculty, the most listeners, etc. Who am I? What am I? I sat before the Rav. I spoke and learning with Reb Moshe. I spoke and learning with Reb Yosef Elio Henkin. I spoke and learning with Reb Aaron Cutler. Who am I? What am I? So you see, there's a natural tendency to think that the earlier generations were greater. And Chazal already saying that ma'atu adarot, matan Hebrew, im rishonim kamalachim onu b'nei tamutar, im rishonim b'nei tamutar, nanu chamorim v'afil lo kachamor pinkas ben yoy. It's a number of places in Chazal, both in Gemara and in Medrash. No, I want to ask you the truth. Were the really immediate generations before us so much better? And are our students so much worse? It's a very interesting question. When I sat in front of the Rav, I thought the Rav knew everything because I knew nothing. You follow? Today, Baruch Hashem, 65 years later, all right. Lo amaretz anochi. But you don't want to recognize that because you're looking back at your rebbeim. Then you look around at the students. Sure, you were a serious student. Your friends were serious. Who were my chaverim? Jerry Blau, Ray Weinberg, Steve Riskin. I mean, these were serious guys. Israel Rifkin, Abba Braunspiegel. I'm not using titles. We were kids. Heshi Shachta. We were kids, but we were serious kids. No, today's generation, it's true. You live longer, you grew up in our scroll, you have a long way to go to catch up. But some of you catch up and overtake us by far. Socrates thought the world was coming to an end. What are we, thousands of years since Socrates lived? And Baruch Hashem, Am Yisrael, Chai v'kayam? Take a look, Chinuch. Take a look the way we began. Take a look, Israel. Who would ever dream that there would be 2 million plus Shomer Shabbos Jews, al pi halacha, in the state of Israel? I mean, if you would have told that to Ben-Gurion, to his wife, she would have committed suicide. Paula had tremendous enmity towards Yiddishkeit. If you would have told that to Weizmann's wife, oh, what went on when a Bearden Payas entered the Machon Weizmann, where she lived till her death. They had a house there. They say she would be livid with rage that there's still Jews in the world with Bearden Payas, and what bothered her more, top-level scientist. So it's a very interesting thought. I'll leave it to psychologists to deal with it. But we all have that tendency. Harishonim kamalachim. I don't know, Harishonim kamalachim 100 years ago, 200 years ago. Could be, I agree. I will never argue with Chazal. But all right, our immediate generation, and Baruch Hashem, we've achieved, my generation, and our students, go on and take the standard bearer further. Okay, so it's a very interesting comment that Rabbeinu Manoach says, Zev rak bedorot harishonim. It has no application today, but the Kesef Mishnah struggles with it, and he's not too happy to accept what Rabbeinu Manoach is saying. My dear students, halacha lemaisa, you won't believe your ears. A favofenous source. Aaron Sursky, anyone know who he is? He's a B'nai Brak Jew, I don't know, I hope he's alive. He's published a great deal on Gedolei Yisrael. I cannot say that this is Bernard Rebel scholarship. It's not what we call a critical biography. Critical doesn't mean negative. It means a biography with footnotes and sources and understanding. But he's published a great deal. Came out with a volume a few years ago, 2013, Eish HaTorah on Reb Aaron Cutler. So I walked by in my favorite bookstore in Geula, and I saw the two volumes, and it was Medafdef, and I saw pictures of people I knew when I learned in Lakewood. I bought the books on a moment's notice, and it took me a week or two in my spare time to enjoy the two volumes. As I say, not a critical, there was much more I would add, much more I would question, much more I would deal with seriously, but a biography a la B'nai Brak or Art Scroll. But bad.
It's honest?
Excuse me?
But it's an honest, but I mean...
Within the framework of the way they understand the world. I don't know if it's entirely honest when you deal with the... look, off the cuff, there's a tremendous problem that the world has with Rabbanim. I spoke about it when I dealt with Das Teira. If we had listened to Rabbanim, none of us would be sitting here. Follow me? I wouldn't be sitting here, that's for sure. They were against the simple Sugihara. This was the whole question, that don't even ask for the visa, it's not going to help. You got to go to the KGB and ask for NKVD at the time, ask permission to get out of Russia, you'll be sent to Siberia. Every decision made was wrong. The miracle was that Zerach Vahavtik started shouting and yelling at Reb Lazy Yehuda Finkel. Reb Lazy Yehuda Finkel knew Zerach Vahavtik's father, and that's the miracle of Shanghai. So this is a very serious question. I dealt with it. You all should be familiar. A Talmud in Panovich asked the question, Reb Chatzkel Levenstein, the famous Mira Mashkir, the Panovich Mashkir, we're talking of Gadol Shebegdoilim, the man who succeeded Reb Reuven Levavitz in Mir, and came to America, ran away from America, came back to Israel, and wound up in Panovich for years. And he asked this very question, and he admitted that the question is overpowering, but he answered that a Rebbe, a Rosh Yeshiva, can only give an answer with Torah logic. Sometimes God wills otherwise. It doesn't mean your answer was wrong. It just meant that God willed otherwise. And when I gave the shirm, I simply stated, this is what Chestaponim is all about. When everyone asks this question about the Rabbanim and the Holocaust, I say there's no question, because Hastir Hastir et Panai be'et Tachi. And this is Chestaponim. So you cannot criticize Rabbanim. You have to praise Reb Lazy Yehuda that by some miracle he listened to Reb Zerach Vahavtik. Now, this does not come out. When you read the Aguda literature, it's like I showed you with Russia, how Aguda Yisrael, this person who's done Agudas, publishes a book and slaps Rakefet's face 100 times over and slaps Tzvi Gromov's face 100 times over. You follow?
Remember the book you quoted?
In class, the one I did, I spoke about in class. I mean, Dr. Rothkopf, Dr. Rakefet.
Not everything is. I mean, that was obviously.
That was slanted when you say everyone else rap. I bet that's the least of it. But not to mention to make up a false story to take Yosef at Tzadik Mendelovich. It's mind boggling. So, Chestaponim. I'm not going to say that Rabbanim, but it's a terrible question.
You're saying they just ignore it? They just doesn't talk about that.
No. So it smoothed it over. Right. It doesn't go into details, and Zerach Vahavtik doesn't get the credit. There are more examples. But this is a bone in the throat of anyone dealing. When you read the response to literature, it comes up time and time again. One of those who was a Nitzel Shoah, Shapiro, he wound up in Baltimore, I believe, Rabbi Shapiro, and he was a Talmud of Rabbanan in Kletz. And I believe a daughter of his is married to a son of Rabbi Tendler, if I'm not mistaken. And there was a son in Baltimore, a fabulous individual, a son of this Rabbi Shapiro. So when he finally reached America, he went to see Rabbanan. And he wrote about it. He wrote two books about this particular the Holocaust. And Yomo, do me a favor. Yomo, you're going out. Can I trust you to get 3 to 4 Torah Traga boys to come at 6:45? We should have a minyan for Marav. Tell them it's a chesed for the people in this room over 65. Okay? Back here. So, where were we?
He wrote two books.
So in the second book, he describes how after the Holocaust, he reaches America. And he goes to see his Rebbe, Rabbanim, with all these questions, and all they can do is cry on each other's shoulder. And this is Chestaponim. And I can't get upset with the people who raised the question, And I do get upset with the people who don't know how to answer the question. You don't have to justify. The Reb Chatzkel's answer was fabulous. Just add the word hestepanim. Now, there's a fabulous story here with Rabbi Revel. Beginning on page Resh Lamed Aleph, that's 231, not with Rabbi Revel, with Rabbaran Kutler. What's the sign? You have to know Rabbaran. Rabbaran, I've told you time and again, the Rav became the Rav in America. 90% of his learning was in America. He came to America in 1932. Okay? He was the Rav. He was a London. No one knew his name. He was an Eloi. Then he was in Boston 10 years, trying to be an American rabbi, worshiping the ground that Rav Lazer Silva walked on. And the rabbinate slapped him. Thank God he was selected to succeed his father as the Rosh Yeshiva in Reitz. Beginning with May 1941, he gave his first shiur in Reitz, Osios Niknes B'Mesira, Sugyim Baba Batra. In that little classroom, 102, he became the Rav. And that learning, you don't have to believe me, the Rav says that if you read the Rav, the World of Volume 2, I quote Rebbe word by word how he says why he's so devoted to YU. The Rav became the Rav in America. Reb Lazer Silva became a Gaon Adir in America. He was an Eloi. He came from Europe running away. You know why I told you many times why he ran away from Europe? Because he married the librarian in the Shvashun Library, a sweet, beautiful young lady, and he fell in love. And he married her, no shidduch. Everyone was talking. His father was a well-known rav in a suburb of in Litna, Kovna, and the everyone gossiping. The heck with you people! He went to America. In America, he became a businessman. No, he was selling insurance. Within a year, they told him it's not for you. Became a rabbi in Harrisburg. He sat in Harrisburg, finished up his rabbinical duties from about 3 in the afternoon to 1 at midnight. After midnight, he sat in the shul and learned. He became a Kutler in America. Reb Aaron Kutler came to America, and if he had a spare minute to learn, I doubt it. He got involved, he lived with Bat Hatzal. He got involved with rebuilding Kletz, Lakewood. He had to raise money. It's a Rachmanis. Today we're living in the year 2018. No one would dream that YU has financial problems and Lakewood is rolling in it's true, in money, in cash, in fundraising, and YU, we have the budget deficit. No one would dream that would happen. Reb Aaron was European made. The shurim, he said, if anyone learned at Lakewood, they'll collaborate. What I'm saying, he had a 7-year cycle. That 7-year cycle went back to Kletz. In America, he was, it was a tragedy, but he was overwhelmed. Now, here they tell a story that Reb Aaron was involved in klal work, whatever it means, Hatzalah, raising money, the yeshiva, and his Rebbetzin. His Rebbetzin was Rabisa Zalman Meltzer's daughter. It's not a small matter who her father was, the Avneyeza, and Evan Hazel. Evan Hazel, and that was her father. And she comes over to him, and Chana Perl, Alecha HaShalom, I yet knew the Revitzin, she comes over to him, and she says to her husband, I'm Shuldik, excuse me, but tonight in the evening is your mother's yahrzeit. You have to go to shul to say Kaddish. And he answers her, Ichab nisht zeit. I don't have time. I can't. I'm involved in Sachei HaRabin. And that comes first. And he did not go to shul to say Kaddish. Could you imagine this story? Reb Aaron Kutler. So now I'll let you into a secret. Who did a doctorate on the Kaddish, by the way? No, David de Solapool, his doctorate was on Kaddish, its origins, its meanings, its development, the various nuschot. I have a copy in my house. Gentlemen, without a Kaddish, the whole Baal Tshuva movement would be much weaker. Do you have any idea how important the Kaddish is? Jews in America were so distant from Yiddishkeit. Suddenly they wake up and they come to shul, they have to say Kaddish. And if you have a rabbi who speaks their language, reaches their hearts, that Jew who came in on Machalel Shabbos, I daven every morning with the family, I don't want to mention the name, their whole Yiddishkeit began because they had to say Kaddish for a grandfather, okay? Today, tens and tens of members of that family are Shema Torah Mitzvah. By the way, for your edification, their cousin who just died, you remember Everyone Loves Raymond, the TV series, the sitcom? Raymond's mother, Marie, the Catholic lady, the chubby Catholic lady, she's as Catholic as I'm a Chinaman. She's their first cousin. Jewish, but she's not part of the family that had to say Kaddish and was exposed to Yiddishkeit. No, tell me, what's the source for Kaddish? Open a Gemara. Is there any place in the Gemara? The Gemara talks about, all right, Yeheshme Rabba, when children say it, it's very important, it's a schut. But the Kaddish that we know is totally something that developed over the millennium. It is Minig Yisrael, I would use that word. Litvaken, who went with Lundis, some of them had a negative attitude towards Kaddish. How do I know this? All right, you just heard the story of Baron Kotla. I'll give you the footnote here in a few minutes. But I'll tell you something b'didi havi ofta. It happened to me. Shocking. I was a young rabbi trying to build the first Orthodox shul. I'm the first rabbi, suburban Essex County. No one believes, I tell it today, no one even believes me. Kushner, the man who will be viceroy, Mishnah LeMelech. Where did he grow up? Whoever heard him, Livingston. There should be an Orthodox shul. The biggest conservative temple was there. With a rabbi who was Dafka, a nice individual. I had other rabbanim, conservative rabbis, drove on Shabbos. He Dafka was more upgehit from him. Who could believe I'm building a shul kaddish? And here I am giving a shir in Reitz. I'm a Rebbe, a Rosh Yeshiva. I'm working hard, and I finished all my coursework for my doctorate, and the lady who ran the graduate school course, the dean, was Bernard Lander. With all due respect to my dear Bernard Lander's memory, and we were very, very close in life afterwards, he was three things at once. Three things at once. He could talk to a student, write notes, and talk on the phone at the same time. I once saw him in a restaurant eating his supper. They brought a phone over to him with a wire that stretched from here to Washington, D.C. It's before cordless phones. And he's on the phone eating and reading the New York Times at the same time. So to run the graduate school, he had a lady at Sadekit, Pearl Cotton, if you remember the name. She was called, you didn't call her secretary, she ran the school. She was called the recorder of the school. So Pearl Zichronet Sadekit Levracha, Mrs. Cotton, says to me, Arnold, you're going to be like all the other rabbis. You will have finished your courses, but you will not have time to write a thesis. Get a topic and get to work. So, making a long story short, I'm assigned the topic of the man who was the first president of Yeshiva University, or what becomes Yeshiva University, Rabbi Dr. Bernard Neville. Now we have to make a probe. Is there enough material that you can get to write a doctorate? And Bernie Lander, Dr. Lander, picks up a phone to his Rebbe's widow, Mrs. Sarah Revel, and arranges for me to come to her home in the Broadmoor Hotel, 102nd and Broadway, and to see what she has. Unbelievably, she had two suitcases filled with unbelievable documents that she called the porter to come and take and throw out. And when she got Bernie Landers' phone call, he said, don't come. And she showed, and these two suitcases became my doctorate. Now, I became very close to Mrs. Revel and to the son who still survived, Norman. And one day, I don't know how it happened, Mrs. Revel tells me a story. It could be I was asking her, I'll talk about this next week, but in 1924, there was 23, 24, a rabbinic delegation visited America, and some of the greatest rabbis in the world came to raise funds for the yeshiva in Palestine and Europe, and one third of the Rav Kook came from here, and the others were the Kovnarov and the Lush Mordechai, the Slabodka Rosh Yeshiva. The Kovnarov, Avram Dobir Kana Shapiro, at a certain point stayed with the Revel family in the Broadmoor Hotel. Could be he knew Dov Revel or knew his father from Europe. Now you have to know how Mrs. Revel was raised. Mrs. Revel was raised in Marietta, Ohio. She came from a family, the Travis family. They were a Chabad family. They were frum. America did not corrupt them. You had a handful of frum Jews in Marietta, Ohio, who remained frum and had an Orthodox shul. There was no yeshiva, no day school. She grew up an oddball in Marietta, Ohio. All the girls in public school, some were Jewish, some were not. Who knew about Shabbat? Who knew about Kashrut? It's not like today that girls can go to day schools, to yeshiva high schools, spend the gap year in Israel. Today there's no end for women's education. But in those days, she was not educated, but she was very frum, very medakdeket in mitzvot, very careful, a wonderful lady, isha gedola. And she told me she had a horrible experience with the Kovnarov. So I was curious, what's the experience? One afternoon, the Kovnarov and Rabbi Revel are talking and learning, discussing questions, problems, and Rabbi Revel gets up and says, "Min daf sechayl, and we have to be quick. Ichab yotzeit fada mama hainten obend, I have yotzeit for my mother tonight. I have to get the shul in time to take the yomid, say Kaddish." And the Kovner Rav says to him in front of Mrs. Revel, "Du glaubst echit in der Narishkeit? You also believe in these foolish things that have no source in the Gemara?" And Mrs. Revel was shaking when she told me the story. A simple girl growing up in Marietta, Ohio, what Kaddish means, she was shaking. But you see, you have two totally different approaches. And he says it in the footnote, and I am guilty. I plead guilty. Look at the footnote, because he understands this is a shocking story about Rav Aaron Cutler. His wife is telling him, "Go to shul and say Kaddish for my mother-in-law." Imagine, a daughter-in-law is telling him, "Go to shul and say Kaddish for my mother-in-law." And he says, "No. Oseik b'mitzvah, tzachei harabim. Don't have time." So he tells the following on page Reish Lamed Bet, footnote 2, that an old Talmud Chacham from Europe told him the following story, that he once was together with Rabaran in a summer resort, and he was in Yud Beit Chodesh after his mother died. And he asked her, "What's better? I should go to shul and demand that they give me the amid to be the shliach tzibur, or I should learn mishnayot and let others daven famomid?" And the Baron told him, it's absolutely not a question. You learn Mishnayot more important than anything else. And you see, that's a Litvisha approach. All right, you can say Kaddish, but people have minchag. I see in Israel, Saturday night before the yard site, they have to daven for the Amid. Saturday before the yard site, they have to have the Haftorah. Maftir. If they don't have it, they can go out and organize another shul, like the Young Israels in America. 90% of Young Israels were organized because people didn't get the right to say the Haftorah, or someone overlooked them for the Amid or whatever. All right. A Litvisha, you see how different the approach is? And I have to tell you, I plead guilty. My parents, I'm a yatom on both sides, although I was psyched to have a mother. I was over 70 when my mother died, so I was privileged. I think you understand what I'm saying. Privileged, and I was Zeicher, Baruch Hashem, but my parents may have made me a yatom, an orphan, they didn't make me a chazan. A good voice I don't have, so my father's yard site, which falls Chol HaMoed Sukkos, my grandchildren daven from them. I have grandchildren with wonderful voices, fabulous nusach, Chol HaMoed, fabulous nusach. I say it's a schut for my father that a great grand, in other words, if it's my grandson, it's his great grandson, is davening for Mamet. Beautiful. All right, I say Kaddish. My mother's yard site was just a few weeks ago. I say Kaddish. I do not daven for Mamet. Tircha de Tzibur, and if you know how long it takes me to say Shmon Esrei, I finish right before Birchat Kohanim every day. But I make a siyum. I knock out the regular guy, the doctor, professor, Shmuel Dershowitz, Sam Dershowitz. I knock him out. Know the name. It's a second cousin to Alan. Sam Dershowitz has big yichas. When he and Aaron Lichtenstein graduated Yeshiva College, or graduated him to BTA, I don't know which one it was, they both won the Talmud Prize. They shared it. No, it has to be Yeshiva College, because Reb Aaron graduated Chaim Berlin. So it's Yeshiva College. Could you imagine Sam Sharon today in his old age? I think he really wanted to be a Rosh Yeshiva. He's a world class, he has a PhD from Columbia, a very bright guy, certainly for chemistry, always made a good living in Israel, very much needed for the government. Chabad came to him, Tchelet Tzitzit comes to him. You have no idea how many people bother him because he has this unique knowledge. But I see today, whenever he meets someone, he has a good Devat Torah. I see a Hat Nachas, he's giving a Devat Torah. I knock him out, and I make a Siyam. That's the Litvak in me. But then I have to admit, 1 minute later, Alex, I become a Chassid. Why? If you make a Siyam in Shul, and you Toreach the Balabatim to stay a little longer, to hear the Hadran, the special Kaddish, I give a Hilula. They call it a Kiddush, a collation is a better word than Kiddush. It's not a Kiddush, but I give a Bramfin with, and I have to have two cakes with sugar, without sugar. Verbrennt ein bisschen. At that moment, I'm not like my Rebbe. You remember the Rav on the yard site? Sat all day and learned Mishnayot. Oh, and it was unbelievable. Fasting. Morty Tarragon, Professor Tarragon comes to the Monday class. So Morty Tarragon has one parent who died in Adar, where there's the whole question, Adar Rishon, Adar Sheni. He fasts both Adars. He's a Litvish. His wife's father was yet a Talmud of Reb Aaron in Kletz. That's how far back they go with Reb Aaron. At their wedding, Reb Shnur was Masada Kedushin. So Morty is a real Litvak. But unfortunately, age has taken its toll. And Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur, I don't budge. In other words, I just sit in one place. Of Baruch Hashem, I'm able to fast like a mensch. But outside of that, bin chachasit. Yes, yes.
I just heard a story. My father told a story about Rabbi Elimelech Bloch, who was Rosh Hashiva.
In Tells, in Cleveland.
And he says that one day, Rabbi Elimelech was supposed to go for a certain important stuck, and it was the day of his mother's yard site, and the train was leaving in the morning, before Chakras.
Right.
And he left and he didn't daven Chakras on his mother's yard side. He didn't say Kaddish.
Didn't say
so
Kaddish.
So they all asked him. Yeah. He asked him, are you talking?
Right.
So Rebbe Meir said, what would my mother want?
Right, right.
As well, don't just God on this Kaddish Meirabba or the tongue just God on this Kaddish
Meirabba. Good gesagt. I want to translate that. It's a story. Did you get the minion? Okay, thank you, thank you. And Yomo, please stay. Don't run out. This is Yosef Mordechai. You know who he is? He's going to write a book one day. A funny thing happened to me on the way from the Ukraine to Jerusalem. And you don't know, you see, you say, Alex, one day you're going to say you were proud to meet Alex Glassman. You understand? Alex, by the way, that source on Rabbi Anhutner, the Goldberg article, I hope you wrote it down. I'll give you a copy of it when we get back. Because keep a list of the sources I'm quoting now, because I really hope you will be the man to do a critical biography of Rav Yitzchak Hutner. You follow?
I don't know if
it's
a biography. I'd like to do studies on his work.
But you have to deal with his writing, the morale that he had, that he heard. He has a philosophy, an MA from UFP in philosophy. Okay. Anyway, coming back here, the story collaborates the Rebaran Cutler story. And again, it explains the Kovner Rebbe's Gisha, we'll use that word, his approach. And you can understand how Mrs. Rebbe was so upset. You have to understand how she was raised, where she was raised. And then when you're raised with a shul, Marietta, Ohio, the Kaddish Suggers are the backbone of the synagogue. But it's quite a story. I never told it before, but all right, it's time to release that story too. But this story is from Rabbi Meir Bloch, who came, he and Rav Muckle Katz had come to America to raise funds for Tills in Europe, and the war broke out, and they were stranded. And Rabbi Revel asked them to come to Yeshiva Shrub Schochanan, to come to what is today YU, and he would appoint them Rosh Yeshiva. Rabbi Revel had his fondness for Tills. Do you know why? It's the only yeshiva he ever learned in. Rabbi Revel was autodidactic. He never went to any yeshiva. He sat in the Beis Medrash in Kovna. Half a year, one semester, they say, he spent in Tells. And he always, that's how he brought Rav Volk to the yeshiva. And there were the other Tells, Rabbi Honest, he had a fondness for Tells. So for him, if he could bring the two Tells of Rosh Yeshiva to New York, it would have been a great achievement. But they felt, the basic reason was they wanted to perpetuate Tells, and they didn't want to be lost in the greater yeshiva university structure. So they remained in Cleveland. Cleveland always wanted to have a yeshiva gavoha. Originally, the Nohaven yeshiva went to Cleveland. The yeshiva, that was the first yeshiva outside of YU, an advanced yeshiva established in America. Rabbi Levenberg, Rabbi Belkin taught there, 29, 30. It's the first yeshiva, 30, 31, and they moved to Cleveland, but it didn't catch on in Cleveland. Then they moved to Baltimore, and Rabbi Levin, the son-in-law took over, Rabbi Ruderman, and that became their Yisrael. But there was that vacuum in Cleveland, and they organized Tells. So here, Rabbi Meir Bloch has to go out and whatever was fundraising,
This is in Europe.
Oh, this is in Europe, yeah. So in Europe, and he had Yahrzeit for his mother, and the train left before you could daven Shachris, and he didn't daven Shachris b'tzibur, he didn't say Kaddish, and people said to him, what are you doing? You have Yahrzeit for your mother. And what did he say? Go ahead. What would my mother want? That I should say Yitkadal v'Yitkadash, or that I should live it, that I should do it. And that's the same story. So these were Litvisha, but I'm not advocating anyone listening to me to follow this. Follow me if you wish. Don't be a Shliach Tzibur. Make a Siyum. All right, that I always have a seam in my pocket because in my mother's yard side, my father's yard side, it doesn't work out because it's, you can't give it, you know, it's Chalamoid Sukkos. But I always have a seam in my pocket And I'll let you know a secret, I have two siyums at least a year, because I have to make Erev Pesach, I'm a Bechor. And in the shul, they're like forcing me in, because someone was making a siyum, and they're choshesh. I know some American rabbis, they made a siyum by opening up the last Talmud in Baba Batra, and you take it from there. Now, I want to go further, finish out a very fascinating tshuva, and he deals with the Rambam, he deals with Rabbeinu Manoach, and he deals with the Retar Rishonim. But you see, at the end of the tshuva, he raises, I think, and this is critically important, and it shows you the common sense that Rabbi Menashe Klein had. Mamish, I call it common sense. Tell me, what are you trying to convince this young person, be it a boy or a girl? What is unique about Judaism, about Torah? I know a student of mine married a Catholic from the coast who converted as a teenager. And she's come from a very illustrious family, a very nice marriage. Many years later, there may be grandparents already. And I once asked him, what made you, and he came from a very fine family, an Afro-American, erudite family, professors, serious practitioners of some form of Protestantism. He said when he was a teenager, he looked for a religion that spoke to him. And he said, Protestant, Catholicism, you go an hour a week to church, and that's it. He said, Judaism is 24/7. You're always living in God's presence. Whatever you do, go to sleep, you say Shema, you eat, you make a bracha. Everything is sanctified, whether it's our work habits, our sex habits, our food habits, everything is sanctified. He said, I was very attracted, and he became a Ger Tzedek. Now, compare this to Reform and Conservative. Reform and Conservative, when all is said and done, it's like a Protestant religion, like a non-Jewish religion. It doesn't obligate you to daven three times a day. Who heard of such a thing? Kashrut, who heard of such a thing? Tarat Mishpacha, now that you have bathtubs in the house, I don't have to tell you what has been written. There's a book, Tradition and Change, edited by Mayor Waxman. His father was an Orthodox Talmud Chacham, lived in Chicago, taught at what you call Skokie today. And am I confusing with his father's first name? Waxman. What was the father? I think it's, if I'm wrong, it's Waxman is the last name. He was rabbi out in the island. Very big temple. And he himself was personally quite observant, but part of the conservative movement. You read his book, Tradition and Change, it's frightening what they say, some of the articles in the book. But you see, here you're trying to explain to this teenager that Judaism is 24/7. Torah Hashem Tamima. It's an entire lifestyle. You wake up in the morning and you're explaining. And then suddenly you're not davening Mincha. If it's a lifestyle, you're obligated to daven Mincha. What kind of message are you giving him? Is this teenager sophisticated enough to understand the stories we just told about Litvisha Gedolim? And I can assure you there's some people listening who are flabbergasted, who are shocked, who are upset. The Rebbetzin says to Rabbi Aaron Cutler was not a, this is a Gadol Shebe Gedolim. The Rebbetzin says to Rabbi Aaron, Min Dafgein Shul Hanpav, and you must go to shul, you have your Zeit for your mother. You have nicht Zeit jetzt. I don't have time. No, can you explain that to a sophisticated teenager? Go and tell him, Kaddish is not a chiyuv d'oraita, it's not a din d'rabbanan, it's minhag Yisrael that developed because of the importance of Yehei Shmei Rabbah. We want the Ribbono Shel Olam should see the type of children, family this lady left. No, but you're giving him a message. Mincha is important, but if you're doing something else, You can drop mincha. It's not that important. Shachris, look at the story of Bel Yemei Bloch. That's not mincha ready. That's shachris. What would my mother want? Yitkadel v'yitkadash? In theory or in practice?
What was it that he was actually doing?
We don't know. But I would assume he was raising, collecting stuck for the tells. He had an appointment. You understand? You never know. I know my grandson, I was Masada Kedushin 2 weeks ago for my grandson. So I never looked at the calendar. It turned out that the wedding was on my mother's yard site. So you'll say, that's beautiful. It's beautiful. On the other hand, you got to remember, the wedding was someplace near Ashkelon. I couldn't leave early. It's my grandson. It's Masada Kedushin, all that goes with it. So I got home. I finally got to sleep after 12. I have to wake up and get to shul. I have to wake up before 5 a.m. Get to shul, bring the kiddush, set up, to see him. You understand? If someone would have consulted me, I would have said, make it a day earlier, a day later. It shouldn't conflict with the yard site. But what is the message that you are giving him? And then he says, wait a minute. This young man is also obligated to daven. If he's Jewish and it's mincha time, you're obligated, he's obligated. So you see, it's a catch-22. I'll tell you, halacha lemaisa, he doesn't really paskin one way or the other. He's raising the issues involved. If you do stop talking to him and tell him, I have to daven mincha, we'll continue in 10 minutes, you're giving him a message how important davening is. On the other hand, we run the risk that you're in the heat of ecstasy, you're reaching a crescendo, and if you stop 10 minutes later, who knows? The tempo has changed. The climate has changed. The environment has changed. The thought process has changed. You follow me? It's a very delicate she'elah. And to my students involved in outreach, and some of my best students went into outreach, I mean, some went into the rabbinate. But when I look at the last 15 years, Rabbi David Pardo, Rabbi Leib Irons, the Iron Lion, that was what I called him, the Iron Lion, and Rabbi Miller, who's more dour than I am, right or wrong, he used that, he loved that. Everyone said, the Iron Lion. This was Leib Irons, the Iron Lion. I miss him, David Pardo. They're very bright individuals. David Pardo should have been a Rosh Hashiva, in my opinion, but okay, each one has to find their place on the spectrum. He ends off the tshuva, and beautiful ending, the Hiratzon Sheyizkela Habot Da Torah B'Yirat Shemayim Ka'avat Nafsho. This is what you love and this is what you want to do, you should be Zaycha to create much Torah and Yirat Shemayim. And I would say, ultimately, the question of whether to break off, it's a decision you have to make on the spur of the moment. And we find in life, and I've spoken this over with many of my students, particularly in the medical profession, sometimes the greatest problems you face, you can't call Reb Moshe, you can't call the Rav, you have to make a decision within seconds. And you need siyata d'shmaya. You all know the stories of Hasidim who won't do an operation before they consult their Rebbe. So there are endless stories where pro and cons, where the doctor said, you must get back to me within an hour. No, do you have a guarantee that you can reach the Rebbe within an hour? Do you have a guarantee that the Gabbai can give him the question within an hour? Just think of the Lubavitcher Rebbe in later years spending so much time at the kever of his father-in-law, and here a tremendous question comes up and you're trying to reach him and you're only going to get an answer tomorrow. All right, this is a delicate question. It raises other issues. What do rabbis know about the medicine? How do they know what to answer? These are delicate questions. The Boston Rebbe, Rav Horowitz, was a specialist in answering medical questions. Yitzchak Levi Horowitz of the Boston Rebbe, he knew a great deal about medical issues. Obviously, the Lubavitcher Rebbe knew a great deal, and he knew a great deal about everything because of his education and background. I'm not certain every Rebbe in the world knows. Rav Moshe Feinstein depended upon his son-in-law, Rav Moshe David Tendler, whenever a medical issue came up. But as my Talmud, Dr. Phil Kaslan, Shmagai Kaslan, who's a Columbia Presbyterian, said to me years ago, sometimes you have to make a decision in split seconds, and there's no way you can ask and seek guidance. So I would say here too, you can't give anyone black and white guidance. It's what you feel at that moment, how you feel, how to handle it, where you're at, who the prospective Baal Tshuva is, etc. Okay, Adkan. So let me reiterate. We dealt with another tshuva of Reb Menashe Klein. I don't know of any other Achron who deals with this question. It's fabulous question. Anyone who's been involved in Kiruv knows what I'm talking about. The middle of a profound, heartfelt discussion, time to daven mincha. Can you break off? Should you break off? The Rambam, afilu kriyat shema, you're not obligated. Alach et kama v'kama tefila. The Rabbeinu Manoach, the Kesef Mishnah, the Dorot HaRishonim, and this, I think, we all suffer from that complex. It may be correct. It may not be entirely correct. Because when we sat before the Rebbe, we were youngsters. We knew nothing, and the Rebbe knew everything. 30, 40, 50, 60 years later, if you've spent your whole life learning, epistachman kenen, something we know. And we know something. We know a lot more than something. Maybe today we could really talk in learning with the Rav and Reb Moshe. Remember the Rav crying in the Tshuva Drasha, where he cries if he could have only 1 hour more to speak in learning with his father. Do you remember that? Where the Rav says that, and this is exactly 1 hour more, because it's many years later and the Rav knows much more and was Machadesh much more. What would my father say? Okay. Ad kan hayom, next time this class meets, we take up a very difficult question, which is halacha l'maisa. We're talking about mechalalei Shabbos. Can you count them to minyan? Aliyot l'Torah. And I'm going to begin with Rav Menashe Klein and open a world of information to you, including the good old United States and this very, very building that we are sitting in. Wait till you see. That's next Sunday, Be'ezrat Hashem. Next Monday, it's a very special lecture. The classroom is going to be set up as a studio. It will be videoed. And I'm speaking about the Roaring Twenties. The seeds are planted that blossoms into Yeshiva University and a lot more. They invited the staff here, but again, Richard Joe will be here. I have no choice. These dates were forced upon me, so I found out President Joe will be here and people are going to be at Bar Ilan with him, but I think there'll be a few outsiders. Tuesday morning, what time did we say, Yomo?
7.
You want to make it 8 o'clock, be easier for people? But I'm worried about your davening. It's not the... What, make it at 7?
I can either do it at 7 and I can daven afterwards and downstairs or in...
Okay, so we want to stick to 7.
Or I can daven 7 in Machon Lev.
I would like you to daven 7 in Machon Lev and make it 8. So I want to announce on a Tuesday morning, Be'ezrat Hashem, at 8 o'clock, I'm speaking about Rav Yosef Weiss. It's going to be videoed and going to be shown in the United States at a memorial for my Rebbe, Rav Yosef Weiss. Now the freebies.
So we're all mixed.
And whoever wants is involved. I want them to do it in my office, but if a crowd will come, let Giomo, we'll do it in here. 8 o'clock. I prepared already. It's all prepared. One picture they're trying to copy from me.
8 days, not this Tuesday.
No, this Tuesday.
Oh, it's this Tuesday? Yes,
yeah, 2 days. Tomorrow's the Brit. It's this coming Tuesday. Rav Yosef Weiss. And Yomi, you'll let me know tomorrow if we should do it here instead of the office. And Sunday we continue with Menashe Klein. And Monday is the special on the Roaring Twenties. It's for Rav Beryl Wine for his series. Now here is something. Anyone who takes this owes me 18,000 shekel. Make it $18,000 linked to the shekel to the IOU list. I want to thank Aryeh Liebman, my dear student. He went to the people in Boston, and these are the earliest articles that appeared in the Boston newspapers about the Rav. This is from 1932. Rabbi warns Jews on education, advises blend of secular studies. Look what the Rav looked like. Science and religion do not conflict, says Dr. Soloveitchik, head of Boston Orthodox Jews. I made copies of the ones. It's amazing what you can get out of the archives. Here's a Chabad interviewing Rabbi Israel Haber, how he becomes a Chabadnik. This was a chaplain in Alaska, and how he becomes attached to the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and ultimately becomes a Shaluach in Israel. Here's an article on the Kushners buying a multi-million dollar home, a 7 minute walk from Chabad in Washington, D.C. Here's an article on Orthodox girls coming from America and serving in the Israeli army. It's a big debate today with women in the army. You've got to read the article. Very, very fascinating. If anyone wants, these are recordings in Hebrew of people involved in outreach here trying to get Jews to come back to Yiddishkeit, b'lev v'nefesh. It's not the style I would use, but it definitely works in Israel. Here's an article for Alex on the latest book that came out by Kaplan on the Guide to the Perplexed. Who will defend Maimonides? Rav Soloveitchik on the Mishneh Torah and the Guide to the Perplexed. Here's an article of a young lady from Miami Beach, I believe it is, or Bal Haba, Chabad, davening at Rabbi Lipsky's shul. She gave all Chabad mitzvah money to buy, I believe it is, backpacks for soldiers in the IDF. Kala Kavod. And finally, this is an interesting article. I knew about this, but here it is in black and white. About 2 years ago, Rabbi Heschel Schechter, speaking in Beit Shemesh, said that Rabbanim can give a psak who you can marry. And here this that who you should marry. And here this article takes issue with Rabbi Heschel and quotes the Lubavitcher Rebbe, a very powerful quote. I end off with this. When it comes to a marriage, not I can help you, not your father can help you, not your mother can help you, not your seichel can help you. The only thing that can help you is your heart. If you feel for her, go ahead. If you don't, do not. Advice from the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Michael, you want to daven, please, for Hurachim? Here's a durum, whoever needs a siddur. Come on, go on, I didn't know you had a Shia.